Welcome to the Dirt Bike Channel podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Brotherson, and I couldn't be happier, couldn't be more excited to record this podcast today. It is brought to you by my links for Rocky Mountain ATV. So if you want to support what's going on with Dirt Bike Channel, the best way you can do it, especially right now, is to use my links to Rocky Mountain ATV. It's on my website, dirtbikechannel.com. If you're over there, then there's a link that says Shop Rocky Mountain ATV. It's in the menu. And you click on that link and then you just buy anything that they sell. A Rocky Mountain ATV is amazing. They've got all the products you could ever want. Bigger selection, I think, than anybody in the whole country. And they do free shipping on orders over $75. And it's really easy to do that because, dirt biking is expensive. I just ordered some parts from them the other day and they offer like a 2-day shipping. A lot of times I can get the stuff really, really fast, especially if I'm ordering it before about 3 p.m. because then it kind of gets into the queue, you know, higher or better. I don't know. Just in my experience, I've gotten products from them very fast and the customer service is great. So use my links to Rocky Mountain ATV. They're over on my website, dirtbikechannel.com. You can just click on that, or they're in the description of all the YouTube videos and probably in the description of this podcast. So go ahead and do that. People have won dirt bikes for me just by doing that. So it's a pretty cool thing. I want to do a podcast today talking about, well, the first thing I was thinking about is like, man, who are the people that I'm doing videos for? And who are the people that, a lot of the people that listen to my podcasts? And as I was thinking about that today, I know who that person is. That person is the person who, I swear, a ton of people have found my channel and I've helped so many people where it's like, they were in dirt bikes when they were kids. And then it was probably because their mom or their dad was helping them. And then once they got to be about 20 and they move out, 18, 20, whatever it is, now they can't really afford dirt biking. They're just getting started and they're having lower paying jobs or they're just starting in their careers or whatever, and they can't afford dirt bikes. And so it kind of goes by the wayside. And that happens until they're sometimes around 30, 40, even 50 years old. And then they have, even some guys are 60 years old and they want to get back into dirt bikes and they don't know exactly where to start. They feel like they've been out of it and they have more questions than they have answers. And sometimes the internet can be a really tricky place. And the internet is a great place to go to get information, but a lot of times it's so much information and you don't know what is right and what is wrong. It can really kind of paralyze you a little bit. And so I do a lot of like helping people to kind of separate the signal from the noise. So today in that theme, I want to do a dirt bike maintenance type podcast, just talking about some of the things that I do all the time that I do not hire out and things that I feel like, if you want to get into this sport, you need to be able to just know these are some of the things you're going to be doing all the time. And then there are some things that I hire out either because I just don't want to do it or I'm lazy or it's too complicated or whatever. And there are going to be some of those things. So you're going to kind of have to decide what your list is and see. And a lot of people's list is going to be, a lot of people's lists are going to be different than mine. But this is just kind of giving you a baseline of what I do at home and then some of the things that I'll take to a shop. And I spent maybe 20 minutes kind of thinking about this, just kind of putting a list together. I mean, I've been doing this stuff for, what is it? I guess pushing 14 years now as dirt bikes have been a big part of my life. And so I've done this on my bikes, on my kids' bikes, and even helped some other people, with their bikes, some friends and things. So these are things, so I'm going to start this thing off with, these are things that I do all the time and I usually don't hire out to other people. The first thing, and you guys are going to laugh because it doesn't sound like it's a maintenance item, but it's kind of like the catalyst that starts a lot of other things and even things that I'm not going to talk about today. Washing. Okay. You guys are like, okay, washing is a maintenance item. Guys, don't hate me for saying this, but some people don't fully clean their bikes off nearly as often as they should. Unless I just got my bike dusty, I will wash the bike afterwards. And this, the reason why is because it's just kind of like the beginning part of my maintenance routine. And this is where I find a lot of things that I need more that need attention. And it's where I find things that are happening to my bike before they turn into larger issues. I mean, it could be anything from loose bolts to other missing parts, loose things, leaking seals, like maybe leaking seals in my forks, in the front forks. And then maybe I'll just do like a seal saver. You have these little things you can buy. There's these little plastic pieces called a seal saver. If your fork is leaking and it looks like it's just leaking a little bit, sometimes it might just be like a piece of sand or a piece of debris up in there. I know suspension guys will probably hate me saying this, but like some of this stuff is, you know, I just do this. I'll stick a seal saver up in there and you just kind of stick it up in there carefully and you try to like dislodge that piece of sand or whatever it is and get it to see if it'll stop leaking. Suspension guys are going to hate me to say, but like people have done that a lot. People do that a lot. And you just have to be careful you don't damage your fork seal. And it may be just be a stopgap thing, but it is something that I do. You might also find leaking seals coming out of the engine. You might find that, leaking oil somewhere from a place it's not supposed to leak. One of the places that often leaks that people kind of miss is countershaft seals. That's the seal that is right behind your front sprocket on your chain. And so when you're washing the bike, I'm looking for things like that, you know, loose parts, broken parts, anything like that, leaking seals, countershaft seals, and no better time to find it than when you're washing your bike. Cause you're putting hands on everything. And I should also say, I didn't write this down in my notes to say, but as I'm just thinking about it, if you stay in dirt bikes very long, you're probably going to want to end up investing in a pressure washer of some kind. You don't have to spend $1 million. Like I've had gas pressure washers, have electric pressure washers. Currently, I'm using a quite expensive electric pressure washer that I've had for a few years, and I love it, but I use them all the time for various things. I'll even wash my truck and my cars and anything with those pressure washers. And it's just a good tool to have. Like washing the bike and drying the bike off at the end is how you make your bike look great and how you start all other maintenance items, I feel like. This is the first thing that I wrote down. The next thing I'm going to talk about is tire changes. This is the first thing that I wrote down, and this is kind of where I wanted to start, is tire changes. If you want to be in this sport, you're going to have to figure out how to change tires. If you're going to be serious about this, you need to be able to change your own tires, because you want to be able to do that at home. You get flats all the time. You can get pinch flats in tubes, things like that. And you don't want to have to be taking it down to a dealer or taking it to anyone else to solve those problems. I promise you, you will not ride much, or you'll ride drastically less, I should say, if you do not figure out how to change your own tires. People need to be able to do this. Another thing is if you don't know how to change your own tires, you're literally going to be running those tires way, way too long. You know, it's been a long time since I've run a tire for more than about 20 hours because I want the best bang for the buck and the best performance. And there is no better bang for the buck than having new rubber on your bike. So I feel like you need to be able to do this. I mean, I just in between my last ride and the next time I go riding, like I kind of damaged the tire to the point I've been using tubeless, and I got a flat out on the trail and it didn't seem to want to hold a plug. Usually I can get a plug to go in there and seal, but it didn't want to seal. And so I just rode it back. It's fine. It was the rear tire and whatever. It was flat, but there was no damage to the rim, no damage to anything. I got back and I tried one more time to get the thing to plug and to seal up. And it was just kind of a weird tear. Like it was a tear along this thing, this long section of the tire, cross section of the tire. And I just decided to hurry and change the tire and swap to something else, a tire that I already had there. And so then I'm able to go ride. If I had to take that to a dealer, that would probably cost me at least one weekend of riding, you know? And so you don't want to have to be able to do that. I mean, maybe you can get it done. Maybe you could take your bike, you know, on a Monday, or take your tire off and take it down to a shop on a Monday and be able to pick it up on a Wednesday or whatever. But like tire changes, man, like I have never hired out a tire. I shouldn't say I've never hired out a tire. I might have once back in the early days, but I don't do that anymore. I think if you want to be serious, get serious about being able to change tires. I know that sometimes in the beginning it can be frustrating, but that which we persist in doing becomes easier. So other things that I think we need to be doing at home, oil changes. Okay, this seems pretty obvious, but since these are small motors and they get a lot of wear and tear on them because we're putting a lot of load into them and we're not driving them nicely a lot of times, it's important to change your engine oil. Now, This is especially important if you're running a four-stroke, because a lot of those motors don't want to go more than about 5 hours. They don't recommend that you go more than about 5 hours without doing an oil change. And that could be, and the filter change too. A lot of these four strokes have oil filters as well. You need to be able to do that at your house. Get yourself an oil collection bucket, get yourself the funnel to refill the oil, get all that stuff, because if any of these things that are going to be happening all the time, you just need to be able to do it yourself. You don't want to have to take it to a dealer in order to get some of these just like general maintenance items done. Now, if you're running a two-stroke, it's going to be a gear oil change, and they don't have to happen as often. You know, you could do that every 5 hours if you want. A lot of these bikes can go a lot longer than that. I've gone up to 40 hours. If I wasn't like heavy on the clutch or anything like that, I've gone 30 and 40 hours on two-stroke oil changes. And that used to be in the KTM manual. Like, it used to say like every 40 hours, you know. Now they say like every race and all this stuff, because it's for liability. But I've taken, if I wasn't doing anything super technical and I was never like dragging my clutch or whatever, I've gone a long time in between gear oil changes on a two-stroke. But you still need to be able to do this at home. That's a pretty regular maintenance item. And I would say, you know, if you're going to be doing something a lot, learn how to do it at home so you're not messing around. Other maintenance items that I definitely do at home, anything having to do with my handlebars. Like if I bend a handlebar, then I'll replace it. Like, it's very rare that I do, but if I bend a handlebar, then I'll just order another one and replace it. Like, bar ends, I have to do a lot. And the grips too. Like, I will end up, if I end up taking a digger or dropping my bike down on some rocks or whatever, and it pulls, you know, kind of cuts or where gets my grips kind of messed up, I will then, you know, install that type of thing. Another thing, like levers. If I'm breaking levers, I will replace those at home. If I have levers that are kind of hard to pull, I'll pull everything apart. I will clean things up. I will grease the levers and grease the pivot points, put it back together. If I have, let's say I'm running on a cable clutch and all of a sudden my clutch is starting to feel sticky and it's starting to feel harder to pull that thing, I will replace that. Usually they make little sprays that you can, I was talking about this with one of my daughter's friends a couple of weeks ago. They make sprays that you can spray down, you know, spray into both ends of the that cable. But I just usually replace the cable. If I've got a clutch cable that's not working that well, it's kind of harder to pull or whatever, first I'll work on the pivot points on the levers. And if that doesn't solve it, then I'll just replace the actual cable. They're not that expensive, and that's a maintenance item that I do at home all the time. Clutch and brake bleeding. So if you have a hydraulic clutch, sometimes you can get some air, hydraulic clutch and brakes, you can get some air in that system. And if you get air in there, then it doesn't work real well. And it's not one of my favorite things to do because it's tedious and it's messy and everything. But if I have to bleed my brakes, which most of us are going to have hydraulic brakes on our bikes, and if your lever is squishy or whatever, then it's time for you to flush that fluid out, replace all the fluid out of the system, put new fluid in, and then bleed the air out of those things. There's a few different ways you can do it. There's different kits and things that can kind of make it easier, but that's something that I definitely do at home, and I don't take that to a dealer. Not my favorite thing to do, but it is something that I do at home because you end up kind of needing to do that from time to time. Other things I do, just installing general parts. I'm talking about like brake guards and brake rotors and radiator fans and radiator braces and skid plates and plastic pieces and other parts. Those types of things I'm definitely going to just do at home, you know. And so if I break a fender or something like that, or I have other plastics that I need to put on my bike, or a headlight that I need to put on the bike, or you know, any of these other types of things, other types of accessories other than the radiator fans, or usually it's only a fan that I'm installing, fan or like a headlight that has better light or whatever. I'm putting that type of stuff on the bike by myself because that's just an easy thing to do. A lot of times they're protective parts. They could be swing arm protection. They could be skid plates, those types of things, you know, brake rotors, all that kind of stuff I will be changing by myself, along with brake pads, rotors, other things, installing things like chains and doing chain maintenance. So if I've got an O-ring chain, I don't lube an O-ring chain. I just put WD-40 on it after I'm done washing it. And that's just basically to keep it from rusting. WD-40 is a water dispersant. And so it dispels the water away from it, and then it doesn't rust. Because those O-ring chains are sealed chains, and they're lubricated inside. So if we're lubing the outside of an O-ring chain, we're just, in my opinion, just attracting dirt to the thing, which is not a great idea. But if you run a motocross chain that doesn't have O-ring or X-ring, then yeah, you're going to need to lube the chain, and then that's something that you'd want to do from home. Yeah, and sprockets too. I can't remember if I mentioned sprockets, but if I have to change sprockets, either the rear sprocket, which I have ordered a rear sprocket right now. I just bought another KTM 300 XCW to ride from now through the summer or however long I have it. And I decided to order a different sprocket for that thing. And so I will install that at the same time that I'm installing like a rear disc guard and things like that. So yeah, sprockets, that front counter seal. So we talked about that, or the front sprocket. We talked about counter seals. So the counter seal is this thing that is, it's the shaft seal. You've got a counter shaft sprocket. That's what your counter shaft. You have a counter shaft. And that counter shaft comes out of the side on the left side of your bike, and that's where the front sprocket attaches to. There's a seal behind there, and that seal kind of will start to leak every so often. They used to leak a ton on the older like KTM two strokes. Anytime you did anything with your front sprocket, you were basically needing to install a new counter shaft seal. So I do those, if those are leaking at all, and you can tell because there's a bunch of oil spread out from the middle of your sprocket. And if your sprocket is dirty, that means your counter shaft seal is bad and you need to replace that. That's something that I do at home. Other things that I do at home, like simple top ends. So if the bike just has, I don't know, whatever it is, depending on the bike, if we just run it a certain amount of hours and we're like, okay, this needs to have a new piston in there in a two stroke. It just needs a new piston and rings, and it's a simple thing, and we're just doing it because it's an hour thing. Like maybe we've got 100 hours on the bike or something. I will do a simple top end, like a piston replace with the rings without any issues. I will do that. I'm going to go touch on that again in a few minutes. We'll bring that topic back up on things that I don't do. We already talked about fenders and plastics. I always do those. Batteries, anything to do with the battery, I will just do that on my own. A lot of times, that's just replacing a battery for something else. A lot of the newer bikes come with some pretty good batteries. All the bikes used to come with these lead acid batteries that required more maintenance. And so you were checking to see if there was water in them and all that kind of crap. Most of the batteries now are lithium ion batteries, which are much, much lighter. And there's not a lot that you have to do. But if I'm going to replace anything, like if I'm going to replace to a better battery, a more robust battery, I do that by myself. Should go without saying, but air filters. I do my own air filters. You want to be able to do that by yourself. So you're going to have to figure out some way to get the dirty oil and the dirty, air filters clean. A lot of people have used gasoline in a bucket or whatever. That's not necessarily the most environmentally friendly thing to do, but I know a lot of people do that. Don't know if I've done that. Just who knows? Like, I don't know if I've ever done that, but there's other solvents that you can use to try to get those air filters clean. But that's something that you need to do. You need to have a clean air filter. So if you buy a bike, you also need to have a separate air filter for it, because you want to have one in the bike and one off the bike that's clean and ready to go. Other things I do, carburetor swaps and carburetor tuning. I've never paid anyone to tune a carburetor for me, and I've never paid anyone to swap from one carburetor to another. And you'd be surprised how often this stuff happens. If you have a two stroke that is not fuel injected, or you have an older four stroke, you're going to need to learn how to tune that carburetor to make the bike run. There's lots of videos that I've done in the past on doing that. There's places that you can read to kind of tune those carburetors. But that's something that you need. If your bike has a carburetor, it's best for you to start learning how to tune the thing and what makes it run good and why that makes it run good. So that's something. Carburetor swaps. A lot of times I'm swapping either to Electron carburetor or a Smart Carb on either my bikes or my kids' bikes. And that's something that is very, very important to know how to do. Along with that, on the KTM TPI bikes, that was kind of the first gen of their fuel injection. I think you need to know how to do your air screw. I guess that's something you could hire out if you want to, because if you're only going to have one of those bikes, then maybe you don't need to learn how to do that. But I had to learn to do that because I bought like a lot of them. Like I put in that that air screw mod on probably 30 different KTMs. So I never hired that out. So that's something I learned how to do. Now that KTM has moved to a throttle body fuel injection after, you know, 2023, 2024, depending on which model you're talking about, that's not going to be as much of an issue. But I mean, just any of the general setup stuff, like being able to set sag, figure out how to set your own sag, figure out how to set your bars up, figure out how to set your levers up, all that type of thing. Those are things that I think you need to do. And you need to do it from home. Okay. And I just have a few things. You'll notice this is a very short list, but these are three different things that I came up with that I just hire out. And one of them is not even a thing that I always hire out. It's just something that I try to hire out if I can. So the first thing I want to talk about is fork service and the shock service. Like the more I've learned about suspension and the more I've played around with it, I don't want to do my own forks. Some people will do this in their garage. I don't have any interest in doing it, but like I'm talking about, like if you need to replace seals on the forks, like it's just, the seal is blown and all the oil is gone or whatever, I'm taking it to a suspension shop and I'm going to have them put new seals in it, new oil in it. A lot of times I'll even do a revalve, you know, and try to make the bike better. So I don't usually revalve the bikes when they're new. But on that first service, I might, if I am not super happy with it, I might ask that suspension shop to revalve it to try to figure out a better riding, you know, to make it better for me. And I'm not interested in trying to learn how to revalve my own suspension. It's very complicated. There's a lot of things inside there, a lot of things. And like, I have got a good buddy that owns a suspension shop. It's Kevin over there at Moto Experts. And I've watched him through the years just kind of learn this and hone his craft and all these types of things. And he does it for a living and he's still learning stuff all the time. And so why would I'm just going to pay for that expertise, because in some ways suspension to me is like black magic. I know it's not rocket science, but I mean, there's a lot to it. And I just want to pay somebody to do that part, because it's a monumental piece of your dirt bike to make it right, make it work. If you want to make it work better than what the factory has done, like I don't believe I can make it better, but I believe that some of these suspension tuners can, especially if they talk to you a lot and you tell them exactly what you want. And then especially if they'll do like a free, you know, follow-up thing where it's like, hey, we did this and I paid you some money and you revalved it. Can we just do one follow-up? I want you to change this one thing, make it softer here, make it stiffer here, whatever it is. Like, for me, the forks and the shock surface, it's just a preference. I'm not interested in doing it at home. There's too much that I feel like can go wrong and just too many questions that I have about it. And I haven't invested in the tools, just not interested in doing it. So fork service and shock service, I hire that out for sure. Another thing I hire out is more involved motor work. So like, let me give you an example. So I said above that I would do like a simple top end if I'm just swapping out the piston and rings and nothing else has happened to it. Where I don't like doing it is if let's say I seized the piston, which has happened to me twice, once on my kid's bike and once on a bike that I had, we seized pistons. In that case, I'm probably going to need to send the cylinder off anyway to get honed or replated or whatever. And then we might probably need a different size piston or something like that. So I just have a shop do all that work. And it hasn't happened a ton, but a lot of times I'll send it off to, or I'll give it to I have given it off to a shop in those cases where there's something else that needs to happen. You know, even if it's, let's say, you know, there's multiple things that need to have happen. Like we need to do a top end on the bike and we need to revalve the bike and, you know, with the forks or the shock or something like that, or we're lowering a bike or something like that, then I'll send it off to a shop, you know, and anything to do with the bottom end of a motor, I just hire that part out. It's happened maybe one time forever in the entire time that I've had a problem with the bottom end of a motor, because I haven't kept the bikes a super, super long time. And most of these motors will go 400 or 500 or 600 hours without having a problem on the bottom end, you know. So, and then the last thing that I try to hire out, and I don't hire it out every time, but I try to, are graphics. This is where I'm going to take a bunch of heat on this. Like there's... graphics aren't necessarily hard to do, okay? And I've done a fair share of them. Like I even did some just a few weeks ago with my son. And in that process, he's like, oh, so this is why you like to pay other people to do it, huh? Because it's kind of annoying. It's tedious. And to some people, they love it. And they get like, they're absolutely like enthralled by this. But I don't love doing graphics. And so a lot of times I will, what I'll do if I'm going to get custom graphics on a bike is I'll see if the graphics company, if I can buy plastic from them. Like if I can buy an entire plastic kit from them and then have them install the graphics on those new plastics, that's the best of both worlds to me. And I know it's expensive and I don't do it a ton, but that is my preference is buy, you know, have the graphics company, you know, we design a thing, whatever. And I'm buying graphics from them and I buy an entire plastic kit from them. And they install the graphics on the plastics. And then when it comes to me, I just have to take my old plastics off, put them in a bag or whatever. Or sometimes they're like my brand new plastics. And then I install these newly purchased plastics. And then it's easy. I'm not frustrated. And then when I go to sell the bike or whatever, I can put these new brand new plastics right back on the bike. So now it has the fresh original OEM plastic on the bike and it's good for resale, you know? So those are things that I can do it and I don't always hire it out, but if I had my preference, I would hire out the graphics every time. So you notice that wasn't a lot of things. Fork and shock service, more involved motor work, and then graphics. Those are really the only things that I kind of hire out. The rest of the stuff I'm doing by myself. And I think that the rest of us need to kind of look at that, especially if we're going to get into dirt bikes, it's probably something that we want to do, is get serious about learning how to do these maintenance items, because you're breaking stuff all the time in dirt bikes. It's one of the other reasons that I don't love like restoring an old bike, is I feel like I'm getting enough maintenance stuff happening on these new bikes just in the course of riding them. I feel like I'm working on bikes all the time. So why would I purposely buy a bike that I have to work on in order to even ride it? It's just not been something that I want to do. So thanks so much for listening, guys. If you want to support the podcast again, use the links to Rocky Mountain ATV. They're down in the description of this podcast. They're in the description of all of my YouTube videos. And they're also at my website, dirtbikechannel.com. There's a menu there that says Shop Rocky Mountain ATV. They're the best in the business. If they don't have it, you don't need it. No, there are some things that they don't carry. Like if it's these fringe products or whatever from different companies. And I don't want to say like they stock everything. But what I am saying is I don't know anyone that stocks more than what Rocky Mountain ATV stocks. And I don't think you can beat their price either. And you can't beat the customer service and the free shipping and stuff. So use my links to Rocky Mountain ATV. It'd be amazing. And for every dollar that you spend, it just gives me a kickback. If you use my link, and once you click on the link, you can literally buy anything they sell. Any product that they sell on their website, after you've clicked my link, buy that stuff and it gives me a kickback, and I could not be more grateful for you. So thanks so much. And until next time, leave a single track.